This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rasslan, today we have BFM's very own Uma Pagan. Okay, Pagan.
Hello, Cam.
And here's... No comic books today. Oh, okay. And we have returning, after far too long, academic, musician, star... Well, his name was in a play. Asmil Yunor.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the shelter, man. Yeah.
Shelter?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
From the storm.
Yes.
Okay. He's a musician, by the way. He says funny things. And so our three topics this week will be... Topic number one is badminton. Topic number two is media and fear. And finally, topic number three is the real. Will we ever have it again? I don't know if you noticed, but there was a thing called the Olympics recently. Hey, Uma?
Oh, yes. Just this little thing where Malaysia had, what, three gold medal chances at badminton alone. We had we had three teams in the finals. We had a mixed doubles team, we had a men's doubles team, and of course, the great Lee Chong Wei was also in a final. So we had three attempts, and we won three silvers.
Mm-hmm. With two match points along the way.
Two match points along the way, right?
Yeah.
If anyone's seen me in real life, you know I am not a sporting person. but that being said, I do enjoy watching sport. And I like the camaraderie that comes with watching it, if not playing it. And the badminton finals was something for all three games. You know, everyone kind of gets together, whether in houses, they have organized parties, or in bars, or whatever, right? And for me, there's nothing that fills me with greater joy than seeing Malaysians of all races, like China, India, Iban, Kadazan, all standing up and shouting Balik China to the television screen. For me, that is like the ultimate form and source of unity among our people.
A multi-racist society.
And you know, of course, it's okay. It's okay when you do that, because there's a Malay guy standing next to a Chinese guy screaming Balik China, and the Chinese guy is like, yeah, and taps him on the back, you know? It's not often you see that. Yeah. But no, it got me thinking over this last weekend about, because the rhetoric is always so prominent, right? Oh, you know, Lee Chong Wei is what it takes to bring us all together as a fractured nation, etc., etc. And we say it every time he plays Lin Dan, not just at Olympics, but any kind of finals match. And it's not just for badminton, but more so for badminton. And that's what I find particularly interesting. And so that's what I want to talk to you guys with. In that, is badminton this shared sport that we have as Malaysians? Like nasi lemak. These kind of different things that we as Malays, Chinese, Indians can agree upon and come together behind. Because football's not the same. Malaysia plays football against Singapore and against Indonesia. And yeah, we're happy when they win. We get a public holiday. But there are people who just aren't football fans who won't go and watch it. But whether you're a sport fan or not, everyone I know had badminton plans that night. No one was like, oh, no, I'm not interested. I'm not going to watch it. Everyone I asked had some kind of plan. I called you, Cam, and you were like, I can't watch it with other people.
I kind of watched it, in inverted commas, through my fingers in a corner away from anything. It's just like, it was just too terrifying. But I hear what you're saying. I agree with you. But I would say that football could be that. Football could be that. But Malaysian football is so bad that it never, well, very rarely gets to a chance where it's equivalent of an Olympic final. I mean, this is the very pinnacle of possible achievement. If, you know, football were about to qualify for the World Cup or something, you know, everyone would be there.
True.
But, I mean, although Nicole David's a fantastic athlete...
No one watches the squash.
It's not for everyone,
I wonder... I don't know. I mean, I wonder. We don't know. But if she were in a Olympic final, would that not? Surely. Okay.
But I got this theory. I mean, badminton's very popular because, if you think about it, it's a game that's really suited for the urban space. Because when I was growing up, I see people, you don't have badminton court, but you got your house and you got your gate. You just close your gate, you can play, you got a badminton net. Football, you need actual field. You can still kick around, but badminton is a lot more less intrusive because the shuttlecock is not dangerous. It's not like a tennis ball. I'm a racket. I'm a tennis freak. I love playing tennis, but tennis is not popular because you need this big space and the ball is kind of dangerous because you can play chopping with it. But not
chopping.
So everybody has a personal badminton experience.
Everybody has one, I think, because even if you're terrible with the way you hold a racket, you can still somehow play it.
You're exactly right. I saw this joke someone made on Facebook. I can't attribute it to the person because I can't remember who did it. But it was a very funny joke. And the guy just went, why are Asians better than Westerners at badminton? It's because our houses have gates. Right? And I was like, that's exactly right. We've all had that experience of standing on either side of the gate and then our parents screaming at us because in case you get run over by a car, mm-hmm. yeah. if you're standing on the side where the road is. but also football, like, so growing up, football was never my sport. I used to play a lot of badminton with friends because it felt more accessible. With football, it was still, even in school, it was still the jock sport. Like, you had to be yeah. fast or good with the ball. If not, no one will pass you the ball. And I never was those things. So for me, football was never my sport.
You need to be a horse.
Yeah.
And sorry to say, the passport, the entry point for badminton is lower.
Is lower.
Yeah, anybody can. You can be wearing your working clothes or if whatever, but you kurong and you can still hit a few.
Also, I would say that the history of badminton, you know, we can go back to the 80s and beyond, there is a history. And that history has involved pretty much all the people of different races of Malaysia.
Correct.
True. Somebody at some point has had a moment in the sun. Yep. So it is already. But then football as well has that. So I would take.
Well, football has that, but I go back to your point of, you know, we talk about the greats, right? Mm-hmm. And of the footballing greats of Malaysia's attempt at the World Cup and all of that stuff. But then you're right, football got bad. And because it got bad, there's a current generation that's completely disconnected from those great years. So much so yeah. that when they see something like Ola Bola and say it was based on a true story, they're
ancient
like,
history,
oh, yeah, real yeah. or not?
Yeah.
Sure not, we were that good. Yeah. You know, that's the question.
Actually, yeah. So, badminton, the proximity is more recent because we had 92. The Thomas Cup
final.
I remember that.
That was
yeah.
legendary.
Yeah, it was crazy. Producer Daryl, 1992, did such a year exist? Yes, it did.
Yes, it did.
Producer Daryl, it did.
It did.
We haven't mentioned hockey. Hockey, for me, growing up, that was a Malaysian sport.
It was.
Yeah. But that one's disappeared as
but
well.
But also, we did really well at hockey at Olympic level. Yeah. But then we didn't maintain that greatness.
Yeah, this year quiet, huh?
Very quiet.
Yeah. So what's going to happen, though, in the future with badminton when we don't necessarily have a Lee Chong Wei, a new Lee Chong Wei? And if Malaysia is not in the finals at Olympics, etc., consistently, will we remember it as some sort of ancient history? Do you remember when we used to play badminton, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think if we're not there for long enough. So hopefully this Lee Chong Wei win. I mean, he still won silver, man. Calm down, guys. It's silver. It's great. Yeah. But, you know, this will carry it through. I mean, people watched him play against Lin Dan and that was something else, that
yeah.
game.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of people want to pick up the racket after that. So that's going to continue for a while. Yeah. But I think if we go 4, 8, 12 years, like three Olympics down and there's still no Malaysian like contender on par with Chong Wei, then people will start forgetting about it. Like, what happens after Nicole David? I know there's another squash player. Yeah. I can't remember her name, and she's really, really good. So feel bad that I can't remember her name. But yeah, after Nicole David, what happens?
What's next? Yeah.
I mean, it was a great moment for everybody. Terrifying as well. Mm-hmm. But in a way, it did feel like a throwback to something very old. And badminton, it's so old-fashioned.
So badminton, nasi lemak.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the recorder are three things that all Malaysians have experience with.
Okay.
Plus, with a badminton record, you can play a guitar, man.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So. Yeah, yeah. Is that how you learn?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's how I learn the moves.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And now we go, though, from one extreme to the other, from the highs of the Olympics to the lows of modern media. In the age of Donald Trump and of Brexit, I mean, I was in Britain at the time when they did the Brexit vote, and fear in the media, because this is to follow on from a topic that Azmil brought to us a while back, mediated moral panic, he called it, and it's becoming all the more apparent. But I have a theory, which is that the media, especially Murdoch media, but not just, want to sell nothing more than just fear. They don't want to sell, although they are seen as conservative, right-wing, pro-Republican, pro-conservative. They are not actually promoting those parties. They're promoting nothing but fear. Mm. And I remember with Brexit, the day after the Daily Mail, which is not a Murdoch paper, the Daily Mail was very pro-leave Europe. And so their headline was Take a Bow. So all the people who'd voted to leave should take a bow and congratulate themselves.
You win.
Yeah. You win. But the headlines on their website were all instant fear, fear, fear. Pound is collapsing. Companies are taking out, are leaving Britain, laying people off. The city of London is no more.
Even though that's counter to what they were trying to promote anyway.
The day before. The day before they said these things will not happen. And then the next day they say it's happening now. Because all they want to do is to make you afraid and take the ground from under you. That's my feeling anyway.
I mean, fear makes you consume. I think that's also another thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a great instigator for consumption. I think that's why. I mean, you look at slimming ads and all this stuff. It's promoting fear.
Yes.
It doesn't promote anything else. Well, you look like that. Yeah. Sign up. You know? but... I think Marilyn Manson said it really good in Bowling for Columbine. That was essentially, yeah, again, fear makes people consume. Fear makes people go out and like whether to just make themselves felt better or I don't know. But there's that link.
Because then you will return to the Murdoch media.
You will, yeah.
Because you want answers.
You want to know what's happening next to that fear you told me about me yesterday.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. But also it's adrenaline, right? It invokes a sense of adrenaline and mystery. That's why we like. that's why we're completely addicted to crime procedurals on television. It invokes fear and horror in us, and of course, we know it's fiction and we know there might be a resolution at the end that's safe and hopeful. At the same time, we want to keep watching, want to find out what happened.
That's true. But it's interesting. I mean, like, if you see a lot of film theory in the past, I mean, like, the movies reflected the times, right? You know, so the movie could be very, you know, very optimistic because the times are bleak. But the irony about our times, I think, is like everything's bleak.
It's bleak and the movies are bleak
Yeah, the movies are bleak too. So we're like wallowing in this hyper bleakness.
You say it's bleak, but actually, you know, statistically, various meters.
Oh,
you know,
correct.
We're not necessarily a bleak time. I mean, crime is actually down across the board in many different countries. So Trump is selling stories of fear. And in Brexit, the fear was of the immigrant.
Yeah.
But the counties that voted to leave the most because of immigrants had the least immigrants.
Overwhelmingly white. Yeah.
Yeah. Newt Gingrich, the Republican, he was the head of the...
He was the head of Congress.
Congress.
And then he was also... He also had run for president many times and failed. Yeah.
So he... And he's a big Trump fan. And it was put to him that, you know, the facts are against him, that the facts show that crime is down. And he said, no, but it doesn't feel like that. He says, they said, well, it doesn't matter what it feels like. The fact is it's down. He said, no. And given the chance, I go with how it feels.
Yep.
Gotta have the feels, Cam. Gotta have the feels. Yeah.
And the feel is fear.
No, but I mean, just try a week not watching television, not following the news.
Mm.
Life goes on, man. Birds chirp outside. You know,
well, there's
cockroaches on your wall.
That's the great experiment, right? The idea if you somehow cut yourself off from all of these constant feeds of information that, of course, are peddling these bleak stories, whether you would lead a much happier existence.
True.
I think I might if I cut myself off Facebook, Twitter, stop reading the stories that make me angry and fearful.
Well, you said it there, Facebook. Facebook is, I think it was invented to be a way for people to get together again, meet old friends.
I don't think so. I think this was the purpose.
Really?
The rest was just a smokescreen, man.
That's why it works so well.
Because the stories are just fear, fear, fear.
That guy said what?
Yeah.
No, but not just that. I mean, perfectly reasonable, normal, middle class, wouldn't hurt a flea person is quite happy to post a picture of ISIS burning people to death. a video of beheadings.
True. Yeah, it's true. Like,
what? How? What?
How does that happen? Yeah.
Because the next picture is going to be of kittens.
Yeah.
and I'm just, it's just a roller coaster, but I'm getting immune, not immune, but.
Well, and also it's not just the people, right? I mean, it was that leak that happened about 6 months ago or a year ago, uncovered that Facebook was conducting experiments on you.
Yeah.
And they didn't tell anyone, but they would pick people at random, and some people will get depressing news stories, and some people will get happy news stories, and then they would gauge how you would react to it.
Is this true?
It's true.
No, it's true.
It's true. It was. I can't remember which outlet, news outlet, broke the story, but it's very true. And there's a huge outrage about it because just
manipulated me.
exactly.
Okay, so what's the answer?
The answer is just switch off, man. Nice switch off, man.
Do the whole Walden thing. Find a pond somewhere.
Yeah.
Don't need. Just don't charge your phone. Just don't charge it.
Actually, you're right.
Go all the way to zero, then don't bring your charger.
Actually, Asmil, you're absolutely right. It's easier these days, I think, to cut off. If you do stay in your house and you just don't charge your phone or your laptop, pick up a book and read it.
Because those, those phones always
fit. This is absolute nonsense. Neither of you two are going to do any of the things you've just said. Perhaps maybe you as
Azmil might.
Azmil might. But Uma, come on.
I think after a week of the shakes and withdrawals, I might be okay.
No way. No way. Anyway, okay. Well, look, all right.
Don't challenge me.
I dare you. I challenge you.
I can't do my job if I cut myself off.
Oh, you see?
Hypocrite. Professional.
Well, I tell you, the media. You cannot trust the media. Uma Parkin, I'm Kate Parkin of BFM. So in a moment, though, topic number three will be coming up here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Uma Parkin, MPK Parkin, and Azmil Yunor. We were just saying between that we're going to put Uma in a room, a windowed room, and we're going to come and view him from time to time as he detoxes from all media. Yeah?
Yeah.
He's very confident.
Yeah. I'll be sweating in a corner, naked, and eating my own feces. That's what will be happening, my friend.
Within 20 minutes. okay. So topic number three is The Real.
The Real. Well, we were having this conversation outside. The thing about The Real, right? Everybody wants to keep it real. Everybody's looking for The Real. You know the fact that if you buy a bottle of orange juice and it says real juice, chances are it's probably not 100% real. So there's all this thing about selling The Real. And I was just thinking about this idea that Jean Baudrillard, this French philosopher, once said about the hyper-real, the hyper-reality, right? Where, you know, whatever's been represented is probably not there at all. For example, he wrote a piece about the desert of the real, right? That we will never experience the world as it is because it's been exposed to us. Prior to the experience, it's been exposed to us in the media.
So, in our conversation before, you mentioned, for instance, a beach holiday.
Yeah, I mean, you look at an image or a pamphlet for holiday, right? Let's say there's a photo of the beach, sun, coconut trees. And
the platonic ideal of a beach holiday.
Yeah, and that's what a holiday is. So you will never experience that beach, sand, coconut tree for what it is, which is probably skin irritation, maybe a mosquito here and there, and it's hot. Mm. But you think, no, this is great. This is my holiday. I know.
Because instead you want to go to the beach and experience it in that pre-mediated form.
Yeah, which is, Baudrillard says, is impossible because everything that we haven't experienced has been conveyed to us in the media.
Right. So you will be disappointed.
Yes.
And then you will complain.
Yeah, so the source of our disappointment, you could hypothesize is that, you know, we don't believe what's been mediated to us.
Uh-huh.
Because you will be disappointed. I mean, just all you need to do is like, go to a fast food chain, right? And you look at the big menu and the burgers, they look fat and juicy. And came on this movie, Falling Down, right?
That's right. Michael Douglas. He loses it.
Takes a machine gun and like, what is this? You know, so. So
this is everything. Everything. Even solitude on isolated island.
Could be, yeah.
Is this why everyone I've spoken to, without fail, who's been to the Louvre, goes, Mona Lisa, nothing. And I'm just like, what? What are you talking about? It's beautiful. And they're like, I don't know what the big deal is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's because we've seen it 100,000 times in movies, in magazine ads. And then when we finally go and stand in front of that bulletproof glass, maybe we're thinking,
Actually, speaking of Paris, I did hear that the Japanese embassy in Paris has a department of disappointment.
Because I hope
that's real.
Apparently, so many Japanese tourists go to the embassy feeling so disappointed, and they're upset, and they're in tears. They're saying, Paris is not what I thought it would be. Everyone's so rude.
The underground smells of pee.
The Mona Lisa looked like I'd seen it before. And they have to console them. And then they have to repatriate them because they're so disappointed.
That's a caring governance.
But also, I mean, you know, there is... I mean, few places in this world are as pre-mediated, as spoken of, as advertised as Paris.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you have expectations of Paris of New York.
It's been in movies.
Yeah.
I mean, like, honestly, if, let's say, I was somebody who's never been exposed to media and showed me a bunch of movies, and because if you watch any disaster movie, New York always gets attacked first, right?
No,
Paris.
Paris does.
Paris always gets
Tokyo.
So it's not ideal holiday. So if I go like, I'm not going there, man. I don't want to die. Could be that, right?
No. But that being said, that means I know the answer to this question because my reactions are so influenced by these things. So the fact that I feel a certain way when I'm at the top of the Empire State Building or underneath the Eiffel Tower is heavily influenced by An Affair to Remember or Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, you name it. Yeah.
Yeah, because, and sure, you can put that all aside and go, oh, it's the sheer monument of building the Eiffel Tower, a feat of engineering, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. But the emotion, I think, is surely tied into all of these other experiences.
And then you feel lesser for it because you're neither Tom Hanks nor
Cary Grant
or Deborah Kerr or whatever.
And you don't have no non-diegetic music swelling behind you to lift you up.
That's where you're wrong, my friend. I always play a song on my phone as I'm walking through the street now.
Well, actually, I mean, one of the greatest moments in my life, I remember once I went to Berlin and I had expectations of Berlin through David Bowie. And I knew that it was not real, but it was my pre-imagined Berlin. And so I played his music on my iPod and I walked around and it was magnificent.
And did that help? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Because it worked. It worked. I think because I accepted that everyone around me was not in that space.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a falsehood. But can I ask about, say, Star Wars, right? The new Star Wars. Is this the same kind of thing? I'm not quite sure. That we have expectations that there was this film called Star Wars Once Upon a Time in a galaxy far, far away. Mm-hmm. And we have memories of it, and then a new one comes out.
Rips apart that.
But is this the same? Are we talking about the same? Am I talking about the same thing here? Is this a different thing?
I think you are in that. See, the only difference there is that I think the Hollywood machine is very clever and knows what notes to hit to play with those emotions of yours.
Yep.
I don't necessarily have a problem with that because sometimes when I go to see a movie like Star Wars, I want to feel that way. Yeah. I want those emotions to be hit. That's why I go and watch it, right? And that's why I'm disappointed when it doesn't, because I'm like, you're smarter than that. Yeah. You know what I like. You know what I want. Give it to me.
Plus, you don't want to walk in the new Star Wars scene. It becomes like an art movie, art house film, right? I want to see Star Wars.
But actually, the original Star Wars, I mean, I was at that. I was 10 years old. I was at the perfect age. When I first saw it, there was no expectations. Mm. There was just this movie. We got to go see it.
Mm.
And then the experience was like the first person ever to go to a beach. It was unpre-mediated.
Because there was none of that hype that came before it, right? Nowadays, it's impossible. You can't escape nowadays, right? Everything will come with a hype.
I think we can't escape.
Yeah, we can't.
It's because it's everywhere. I think for people who are not so entrenched in the internet, I think you can still be surprised. I think my mom, for example, doesn't read every piece of news that comes out about a new movie. And so she's still pleasantly surprised when she goes to see these things because she would not know anything about it.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's a nice feeling. I wish I could do that.
It's great to watch a movie this kind of, because then you get a pure sort of like response.
Yes, well, they come without advertising, that they just come unannounced.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe have we found a solution again, which is
to the real,
which is what?
Well, I mean, the real is just this carrot that we dangle on ourselves as a society, I think, right now.
Okay, so once again, we have to go into the decompression booth with Uma, minus Facebook, minus media.
But now with like a stick and a carrot dangling in front of us.
No, so that we know nothing about anything. We become innocent.
Yeah.
Innocence in the world.
Be ignorant.
That's why there's such a great thrill and excitement when you have a nephew or a niece or a friend's kid and you introduce them to like Star Wars for the first time or Transformers or whatever, right? Yeah. Something that you know when they're watching it for the first time, you just want to see their mind get blown, right? Yeah. You can see it happen.
Yeah.
They're like, what is this?
Okay, so children of the future. Is it? Yeah. Okay, but it's too late for us, isn't it?
Too late.
It's done. After this comes, I never realized I will never know a beach as a beach.
That's it. Forget it, man.
Forget it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that happy note, we move on to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something we think might be of interest, and Uma's going to go first.
So this is a recommendation for Cam. It's actually been around for about 3 years, but I just discovered it yesterday and I'd completely missed it. But it's a hoax video on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And it was uploaded in 2013, no fanfare at all. No one knows anything about it. And essentially, it's a video of a record cover and a guy pulling out a record from the record cover and playing it. And the story behind it is that here was a soul band or a group of soul singers that went undiscovered for a long time. And there are only three songs by them. They're called Milky Edwards and the Chamberlains.
Huh.
and they've covered David Bowie in a soul way.
Okay.
So if you search Milky Edwards Starman on YouTube, you will find the three songs they've done. They covered the Ziggy Stardust album, apparently, and the they've album. Done Moon Age Daydream. Uh-huh. And I think they've done Starman, and I can't remember the third one. Oh, Soul Love. They've done Soul Love as well.
Right.
And those are the three songs they've done. And no one knows who's behind it. And so I've been doing some research on the internet, thinking that, oh, in 2016, maybe someone's come up and uncovered who these people are, or who's actually made this music to begin with, because it's very professionally produced as well. Mm. And no one knows anything about it. But the songs are brilliant. It's like, imagine Tom Jones teamed up with like Lionel Richie to recreate Bowie, and you get this.
Okay.
Oh, it's so good. Okay. We should get producer Daryl to like play a little bit of it.
Okay, so the hoax part though. When you say hoax, you mean like what's the hoaxy bit? That it's
the hoaxy
it's a
bit was that it was a fiction and it was advertised as if it was something new.
Okay. What are they called?
Milky Edwards and the Chamberlings.
All right.
Okay, and I'm just gonna play a little bit of something for you.
Tom Jones.
Yeah, but nobody knows anything about it. Like, it's all, like, they got the fake album cover and all this stuff. Like, really, a lot of work has gone into it.
All right, I'll check it out. It might not, it sounds interesting.
But it was recorded in the past.
No, never.
Oh, never.
So, like, you can do all the research in the world.
You can't find anything
like,
about
nobody's
it.
Done, like, a soul version of Starman.
Okay. All right. All right. I will. I'll try it. And my hands are shaking. I don't say. Okay, so my I feel like that should have been my recommendation, but I'd never heard of it.
I saved it for you, man.
Thank you. My recommendation is actually a return to a previous recommendation, but the only kind of cultural thing that's been happening in my life recently is I've been listening to the same two pieces of music again and again and again. And it's Steve Reich, or Reich, I think he likes to be called, the minimalist American composer, who must be, what, is in his 80s now. Sounds similar to Philip Glass and the like. Very repetitive, and his influences are like gamelan and medieval music, etc. So the two pieces of music, I found these two, they're called compact discs, in what is known as a secondhand record shop.
Wow.
and I bought them for small amounts of money, and they've been fantastic. So one is called Variations for Winds, Strings, and Keyboards, which is really wonderful. And the other one is called Tehillim. T-E-H-I-L-L-I-M. It's kind of like it's like medieval plain song.
Plain song.
Yeah. Oh. But it's modern.
Oh.
And it's not like a pastiche, because this is a guy who really understands the form so well. And it's just really mesmerizing. That's fantastic. So Steve Reich, folks, please go check him out.
All right.
Asmil.
Okay, yeah. So I was torn between two different publications. Actually, I'm going with this. Matsum by Dato' Lat.
Yes.
Excellent. You could say it's a graphic novel. It's a graphic novel released back in 1989. Because the magic about, I think, Dato' Lat or Lat's cartoons and comic, me growing up reading it, is the fact that he could make you reminisce a childhood or past that you never lived.
Mm.
I remember reading Kampung Boy as a kid, and I was like, wow, yeah, going through the pelepah, wow. I was like, and I felt nostalgic. I was like, wow, I remember. But then I thought about it. I never would live through that. I mean,
you're a city boy.
Yeah, I hear it from my maybe I'll ask my parents, how was it? And they'll tell me, and then like, I try to imagine it. Mm. And I always found that fascinating about Lat's comics. And of course, he was also very, you know, current about, especially his more observant everyday sort of comics, right? But Matsum was interesting because there was something that was contemporary but also fiction. It's about a guy living in a city who leaves his village. You know, it's a normal trope we hear, right? Or narrative kind of like three-act structure, somebody coming to a city, you know, discovering work and then falling in love, etc. And I found that fascinating, that comic, because it's also open-ended.
Yeah, it is.
You get to it.
Well, funny you say that. In November, at Ilham Gallery, I'm actually giving a lecture on Matsum and the Malaysian Dilemma.
Oh, excellent.
Right. Wow. So I've been studying that a lot. And I love it. I would recommend also people read the BM version. Yes. If you understand BM.
Yeah, read the BM version first. I think that's the original. Yes. Then they translate it. And the font also not so nice. Like
the in the English version.
Yeah, they just like cut and paste it there. I love Matsum so much. I wrote a song about it, a ballad Matsum. But of course, that's my take of a more adult version of Matsum. But good. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, doesn't Lat go on your list, Uma? Badminton, Nasi Lemak,
and Lat.
You're right,
isn't it?
Recorder and Lat.
Yeah. Recorder, yeah. Remember that, man.
That's where your musical talent began, my friend.
No, that actually began when I hated music. Then I discovered I could give the finger,
All right. So, jumping back then, so that's Matsum, yeah?
Matsum by Dato' Lat, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I think we all love Lat.
We all love it.
Yeah. So, that brings us to the end. Only remains now to thank special honored guest, Azmi Yunor.
Thank you.
Are you got any gigs coming up? Tell us how we find out.
Yeah, I'm going to play at No Black Tie on 28 August.
Uh-huh. How do we find these?
Just Google my name, No Black Tie. I think you can find it. And we're also playing on Merdeka Eve at Merdekaria. It's going to be a great night because Brian Gomez's band, Sons of the Soil, and another new guy called Andy Ahmad and the Players are also playing. And my band, Azmi Yunor, Orkes Padu, we're doing the countdown.
Okay.
So come by.
Cool.
You'll avoid the traffic jam if you go to KL. Come to Merdekaria and PJ.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Uma Park and Namke Cup.
How long have you been doing this now?
I don't know. And who can be discovered on, let's go through it again, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
All at Uma Pagan.
And me, available on all platforms. Please join us on our Facebook page, like, etc. The volume is just, the traffic has got, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. We had like 7 people last week. I can't
keep up. Takes forever to load, yeah.
Yeah. And so please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.